Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof. So, we are in the middle of a series of very probing questions, which we're happy that Naftali is able to participate in, finally, Baruch Hashem. We hope it's the beginning of a complete Refuah Shleima. And, Amen. And we've got six probing questions of Abaya, where he's trying to get to the bottom of the issues that are raised by this perek. This perek, of course, is about osim pasim, which is a completely new type of mechitza, something we didn't talk about before, where we're not concerned for the first time about omed merubah ala parutz or parutz merubah ala omed, where we're able to go, according to the Rabbanan, not at least by the Rabbi Meir, but at least according to Rabbi Yudah, the way we paskin, we're able to go beyond the normal 10 amot limitation on a petach. And what's more, we're actually able to turn a Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYochid, which is really wild that we can do this only because of the fact that we have a mechitza of four sides, despite the fact that those four sides are so limited, and despite the fact that they're really only one Amma. Nonetheless, we see from here the power, we're going to stress this later, the power of the Kayach of a mechitza, that even if it's in the middle of Fifth Avenue, it's still a mechitza. And all of the normal, because of the needs of the specific case of pasim, which were for the olei bovel, as we're going to see later, or for osei mitzvah, because of that, we sort of let go of all of the normal limitations that the Rabbanan put on these mechitzas, so that we can get away with murder, so to speak, and have a very, very large area that are surrounded just by these arba diyumdin machlokas, whether we'd have to add the pasim, is it better to add pasim in the middle to make it look more closed up? Or, alibi de Rabbi Yehuda, perhaps it's better to get an elongated diumad. But whatever the case is, we're certainly doing things that we never did before. So there were six questions, four of which we've already discussed, that were raised by Abaya. One of them was indeed the question whether alibi de Rabbi Meir, we would be able to be ma'arich diyumdim, or we'd have to add pshutim. The second was alibi de Rabbi Yehuda, whether we make pshutim at all, because it could be according to Rabbi Yehuda, we don't do that. That could get us into the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda and what is different about pasim than a normal mechitz if you're going to be marich the diyumdim. And it turns out the difference indeed is about the 13 and a third versus 10, where normally we wouldn't have accepted that thing or not. And then we talked about various actual shapes of diyumdim, such as a tail hamitlaket, and that normally we wouldn't have considered to be a diyumad. It's a whole new way of looking at the idea of a tail, which normally you just look at it as a mechitza because it's just 10 tefachim high at the end. But over here, we're actually going to be able to use it a diyumad. And we wanted to know what the din was about chitzas hakanim, whether we can actually use a lovud to be an almost invisible diyumad by having the three kanim one direction and the other direction, and that would be sufficient. And the alternative was talking about a gudrita, which would mean that it was sort of like a hedge. Okay, we're up to today the fifth question of Abaye, and that is much more of a probing question into some of the fundamental relationships between the shape of Rishuyos, the nature of the diurin in the Rishuyos and the heterim that are involved in the interrelationship between some of these Rishuyos. Let me just remind you that one of the things that we saw at the beginning of the sugya was that according to Rashi, it's very important for us to be able to consider the area inside the pasim, the Bein HaPasim, as an area that is connected to living needs. In other words, it's considered to be l'diur. Now, the reason for that is because since we're dealing with substandard mechitzas over here, the norm is that if that is not made for diur, then you've got an impossible situation, which we always limited to the maximum size of the Chatzar HaMishkan, which was Beit Satayim, 50 by 100 amos. Now, it turns out that we paskin here, at least if we don't go a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda, we paskin that you're allowed to go up to any size that you want, as long as you don't have too much of the open space in as a pirtz instead of a petach. And because of that, Rashi initially said, look, the fact that people have to come in here in order to be able to get water is fundamental diur. So it doesn't matter if nobody's living there, actually living there, but it's for tzorchei diur. Now, that raises the question about what is the relationship between a chatzar and a place that is surrounded by these pasim. And this really cracks open a lot of sugyas for us in terms of the relationship of a chatzar to a mavui. Because let's think about a chatzar that is sticking into one of these pasim. So the opening to the chatzar opens directly into the area that is surrounded by these arba diyumdim. And instead of a pora, we've got a chatzar on one side. Can the people in the chatzar carry into the area that is Beit HaPasim? Because, look, there's nobody else living in those pasim. There are people using the area in the pasim. And because of that, we consider it to be mukaf l'dira. But remember that we always consider it to be people that are intruders, so to speak, or just walking through a place, are not considered to be part of the Rabbanan's concept of diurin that change the nature of one rishus to another rishus just because there's other people living in it. So now the question is, what's the relationship in terms of the din of rishus hayochid, whether people in a chatzar can carry directly into an area surrounded bein hapasim by these arba diyumdim, even though people are coming in there for their watering purposes and so on? Is it considered to be separate diurim? Do I need to have an Erev with these people? Is it the equivalent of a Mavui? How exactly do I look at it? So Abaya asks this to Rabbah. What's the deal? Rabbah says, why not? I mean, you can, sure. There's nobody living there, right? So that leads to his next probing sub-question, which is, okay, what about if there's two chatzars? Now, in order to understand this question of two chatzars, to make it more pointed, the question would be, what if there are two chatzerot, one next to each other? The doors open up side by side into the Bein HaPasim. So now the Bein HaPasim looks something like a Mavui, right? The thing is, though, that when it comes to Bein HaPasim, we don't have any of the considerations of Mavui, do we? No, because nobody's going to confuse the structure of four mechitzas with the Mavui. The whole point of the Mavui is that it's open on one side, doesn't have a mechitza. Because of that, we need the Hakara on the other side of the mechitza. This is in terms of how it's shaped, not in terms of its use, which we'll talk about in a moment, but in terms of how it's shaped. It is shaped in a fashion that reminds everyone psychologically of Rosh Hashanah. And first of all, it's open, and second of all, it's long. So it's more street-like than it's chutzer-like. It cannot be squared. Please mute yourself, please, Mayor. Mayor Simcha. So therefore, our first issue is, we don't have a problem with carrying in it. So the only question would be, do we have an issue with the diurim that come in there for the purposes of getting water, says Rabbah. Now, not, but, says Abaye, how about if you've got two chatzeros that are going in there? Then what? But then you have people that are similar to the problem of a mavoi, right? In a mavoi, you've got different chatzerot that are going into the same the general area, which therefore becomes similar in terms of diurim to Rosh Hasharabim. Can I carry from a chatzer into this area, which is a commons now, not a mavui, but a new type of commons, Bein HaPasim? The obvious answer to that is no, because, I mean, why is it different than any commons? Is there a solution to the problem? Well, not very obviously, because the din of sheet of mavoz, which would have been a solving of the problem if it were a mavui, does not apply to this Bein HaPasim. This is not a mavui. And therefore, the entire takana of being able to make some type of meida erev, which we call a sheet of mavoz, does not apply to this particular shus. Is there another way to resolve the issue? On the surface, yes, there is. Assuming that there's some type of connection between the two chatzeros, remember they're on the same side with doorways side by side. So assuming that there's a passageway between the two of them, then they could make an erev with each other, and then they would be considered to be a single chatzar for intents and purposes of diurim, in which case, if they're all walking out through the front door, even though it's a separate front door, who cares? Bottom line is, technically speaking, they are considered to be diurim of a single rishus of diur, right? Surprisingly, what happens is that Rav Huna says, if there's two, you cannot carry in that area from the chatzar, even if you have an erev between the two of you. So there's no way to resolve the issue. You can't make a sheet of mavoz. You can't make an erev between you. And the reason for this is simply because of the way that it resembles a mavoz. Imagine what happens if people see you carrying from different chatzeros into the area of Bein HaPasim, right? Everybody's coming to get their water, and here these happy people are just walking from their chatzer into the diyumdim. What's their conclusion? Their conclusion is that the Yumdim is essentially a kind of mavoi. And if you would have, let us say, a chotzer on one side and a chotzer on the other side, and they have no connection with each other, there would still not be a problem because you could always make a sheet of mevoot in a passing lebeiros, which is ridiculous. So then they would end up carrying, essentially, ignoring the entire idea of the special relationship of chotzer to mavoi, and because of that, we have a gezeira, we don't allow this to happen. Asks the Gemara now, because we seem to have a braita that says not like Rav Huna. So let's take a look at Amar Le Abaye LeRava. You'll notice that I'm doing what I told you, threatened you that I'm doing. We're going to do a little bit faster on the Shakavataria so that we can concentrate on the main ideas, and you're supposed to be getting up there, catching up there on your own before or after. But anyway, you'll have enough ideas to be able to get through it and plug it in there so that we're going to end up having more time and being able to concentrate the way we were meant to with this round of Daf Yomi on the central ideas. Now, it turns out that there's a Farish Abraita that Abaye brings to Rava. Take a look at that. At Amar Le Abaye LeRava, down there's seven lines down. Tanya de Mesayelacha, you seem to be 100% right, because it says a chotzer that has one door into Bein HaPasim, you're allowed to carry, which is what you said, from it into the Bein HaPasim, which is the Pasim Beirot area, and from the Bein HaPasim Beirot area into the chotzer. And there'd be no problem, you could take the water into the chotzer. But if there were two doors from these two chotzeres, it would be osur. But this is only b'medavarim shelo irvu. But if there was an Erev between the two chatzers, it would be mutter, which is exactly the way that Rava said, but seems to be a ti yufta de Rav Huna. So lemetavit yufta Rav Huna. Says Rav Huna that when it says over here, it's talking about its mutter when they went ahead and were ma'arev. Now that doesn't mean, remember, we have two ways of using that word, ma'arev. Remember, the technical word is a piece of bread, basically, some kind of food. But then there's the colloquial, make an Erev. Make an Erev means make a Tzuras HaPesach. Get things mixed together. What it's talking about, therefore, according to Rav Huna, is that the wall collapses between these two chatzers. If you take a look in the picture in Rashi, it shows the collapsed wall at the far end, away from the Pasei Beiraot. Now, that's not 100% clear. Many Rishonim say this is not definitely not the case. And it's talking about, this is a wrong picture. And what it's really talking about is that the front of the wall that's facing the Pasei Beirot, that's the little piece of wall between the two entranceways, collapses. And therefore, everybody can see that this is essentially one chotzer. Says Rav Huna, that's what it's talking about. Irvu, they became mixed. Doesn't mean they made an Erev. They made an Erev before. But over here, they actually became mixed in terms of the Mechitza itself. Now, the sixth question that Abaye has for Rava is the question of the relationship of the water in the bar to the actual validity of the mechitzas. So what he wants to know is, what happens if the well runs dry on Shabbos? Is this a mechitza that we've defined by Shabbos, or is this literally a mechitza by virtue of having the water there? So he said to him, "Klum naaseit mechitza l'bishvil mayim." What gave it a din of a mechitza? The fact that there was water there. Would the Rabbanan ever have acknowledged these four diyumdim as a mechitza in a rishus harabim if not for water? Not a chance. So basically what we're looking at is a special situation. The way to look at it is not, this is really a mechitza, but we don't allow you to use this mechitza unless you have water. No, that's not the point. Because if that were the point, then we have a general rule. Something that is good for the beginning of Shabbos remains good. But over here, the problem is the validity of the mechitza qua mechitza. Obviously, if a mechitza collapses in the middle of Shabbos, if a Rishus HaYochid becomes Rishus HaRabim, we're not going to say, well, it was Rishus HaYochid at the beginning of Shabbos. Why not keep carrying? That's absurd. So therefore, the same thing is true over here. This has the shame mechitza, not the right to use as a mechitza, but has the shame of a mechitza because of the water. When the water's not here, the mechitza's not here, and that's the way you have to look at it. Now, Ravin asks, okay, suppose after the water dried out, all of a sudden, it comes back in, and the water starts flowing again. What happens then? So, does that mean that, like, we've lost the mechitza? Or is it okay now? Says Abaya, look, you're not asking, you want to know what happens when it dries out? I've already found that out from Rava. Rava said, it's osur. Mayim ein kan, mechitza nein kan. But if that's the case, the opposite is also true. Because we know that we have a general rule, a mechitza that was made on Shabbat is a mechitza. Mechitzas have nothing to do with their status at the beginning of Shabbos. It's irrelevant. Either this is a place surrounded by a mechitza, or it's not a place surrounded by a mechitza. Since that's true, and the general rule is, kol mechitza suya b'Shabbat, whether it was done b'shogeg, b'mezid, b'ones, b'ratzon, it is by definition a mechitza, then this thing is a mechitza. Because Rabba said, the thing that makes it into a mechitza is the presence of water. And the presence of water is here, that's all. There's nothing more to ask about. Wait a minute. Didn't Reb Nachman said over there, yes, it's a mechitza, but it's not a mechitza that gives you rights to use it. It's a mechitza that would be mechay of you if you threw in from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYachid. It doesn't mean that if you made a mechitza on purpose that you could go ahead and use it on Shabbos, right? It just means, well, I mean, it really is a mechitza. So how would that apply over here? Come on, man. Reb Nachman was just saying the Rabbanu would not have been matir you if you did something be'isur and you did it be'mezid. They're not going to give you a heter to carry. What does that have to do with here? Over here, it's just a question. Is there water? Is there not water? Nobody did anything. It was just a question whether the water is here. Reb Nachman is irrelevant. You shouldn't have brought it up. Okay. Now, the next question is, if you throw from Rishus HaYachid from Rishus HaRabim into this area of Paseh Beiraot. I mean, I understand the Rabbanan said that you can carry from the Paseh Beiraot and take out into the area surrounded by the Paseh Beiraot, even from a deep well, which is 10 tefachim deep, and it's 4x4 or more, and it's not a problem. Now, that well was Rishus HaYachid, and they're telling you can carry from the Rishus HaYachid into the Paseh Beiraot. But does that mean that the Paseh Beiraot is a real Rishus HaYachid? Or does it mean perhaps that it's a Carmelite kind of thing? So it's really a Mokum Ptur, which the Rabbanim would normally have asserted. But in this case, they didn't asser it because they said treat it like Rishus HaYachid. Or is it honestly, really, and truly four full mechitzas that are the equivalent of a classic Rishus HaYachid? So therefore, my chiddush comes along, Reb Eliezer, to say, is I want you to know, if somebody throws from a public area, from Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa, and he throws into a Paseh Beiraot, he will be chayev echatas. Well, isn't that obvious? I mean, if it wouldn't really be a mechitza, then why would you be allowed to carry out of that Rishus HaYachid? I mean, it's all very nice for you to pretend that it's an area of a Carmelite or something, right? But I mean, we know that Paseh Beiraot can be made in the middle of a highway. So, I mean, we're talking about the Olam Yergalim. It's the middle of a road. The middle of a road is a real Rishus HaRabim. So, I mean, the only possible way that the Rabbanon could have allowed you to carry from Rishus HaYachid into Rishus HaRabim would be if it were a real, honest to God, bona fide Rishus HaYachid. So obviously you'd be chayiv if you throw into it, no? Isn't that pashut? Well, no. Because what I'm talking about, Reb Elazar, is you made a Paseh Beiraot in the middle of Fifth Avenue and there wasn't anything that looked like a be'er there. So you decided you're putting up these Paseh Beiraot, and it's now going to be a little area for you to carry in, even though all the traffic is moving through, and you decide this is a Rishus HaYachid. So that's what I'm telling you, man. I'm saying if you throw from the outside of those Paseh Beiraot in the middle of Fifth Avenue into 2 feet further, you're going to be chayav echatas. What? Yeah, just with those four. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, but I mean, that's also pashut. I mean, obviously, the presence of the water, what Rava was talking about, I mean, he didn't really mean that the water makes it into a mechitza. He was just saying that the water lets the Rabbanan allow you to use it as a mechitza. But I mean, in reality, if it weren't a mechitza d'oraisa, so then it would not work. So it's got to be that even though you just stuck these up in the middle of a street and there was no the Beraot there, and you're pretending they're Pase Beraot, it would work just as well. You note how Abaya has managed to get straight to the crux of the issue. He's opened up the whole sugya over here so that now we finally have a deeper understanding of what's going on. Says the Gemara, okay, but I mean, isn't that also Pshita? If it wouldn't be Lav de Ba'alma Bechitzahi, if it wouldn't be under any and all circumstances a Bechitza, how did a bar turn it into a mechitza? I mean, the same question that we had before, remember, where we thought Reb Yehuda was saying that if you make an Erev, that makes it into a mechitza. We said, well, how does a piece of bread make something into a mechitza? Same thing is true over here. How does a bar make something into a mechitza? That's silly. So it must be that we're making a fundamental determination. This is a mechitza. The question is, when can you use it? So obviously you're going to be chayev. Not necessarily Sir Belazer. My chiddush is that even though the traffic is going straight through it, and that's called, remember, Bakeba Rabim. So where you have a Bikiat Rabim, up until now we've seen Bikiat Rabim as being destructive of the very nature of the Mechitza because you're just zooming right through it. Okay, so what's the Chiddush? That if there's a Rabim, that Rabim are not Mevatel, a true Mechitza? Rabbi Elazar said that already because later on we have that Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda says that if the Derech Rishus are Rabim, so if you have all the traffic running through your Pasei Beraot, move the road to the side so that not everybody drives through the Pasei Beraot. And the Chachamim say, no, that's not necessary. Now, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both pointed out that the Shita of the Chachamim here is to give you an indication. Kano diacha kochan shel mechitzot. You need to understand that mechitzot are such a reality that your concept of Rishus HaRabim versus Rishus HaYochid as being related to the utilization of the area or the presence of people in the area is secondary, totally secondary. It's mechitzos, mechitzos, mechitzos. That's what is koveya the din. Don't give me this stuff about the rabbim going through. It will not make a difference if we're talking about a real mechitza. Anyway, but that was Rabbi Eliezer who said that. So why is he repeating it again? Just say one of them. He did only say one of them. The Talmidim applied it in these different ways. It was applied to the Mishnah. It was applied over here. But that's basically the essential issue. Okay, next thing that we spoke about was you can get as close as you want with these mechitzas to the bor on condition that the pora can get in there rosh over ruba. Is that like a measurement? Or is that really? The pora has to actually be rosh over ruba under any and all circumstances. Let me ask you something. When it comes to a human, how about a human? So there's a general din that we learn in the Mishnah. Lo yamod adam b'rishut rabim, yishteh b'rishut hayachid, b'rishut hayachid, and yishteh b'rishut rabim. You should not be drinking with your head in one area, drinking things in your body in the other area, unless you have rosho verubo in that rishus. So if you're mostly in one rishus, it doesn't matter if part of you is in the other rishus. And as long as Rosh HaVerubo is where it is that you're drinking, that's important. This is true by a gat. Remember, we spoke about that in Shabbos. That had to do with Meiser. If you're standing in a pressing gat where you've got all of the grape juice, the question is, can you take it and drink it? Or you have to take off Meiser. What if you're standing outside of the gat and we're afraid you'll take it out? And you will cleave to Meiser. Okay, irrelevant to us right now. Okay, so perhaps it's only, it says over here, a human has to be careful to have Rosh HaVerubo. How about if your para that you are giving water to is not Rosh HaVerubo? It's just, its head is here. Most of its body is outside. The place is big enough for a para to fit in. Is that enough? So the way I see it is like this. And we're going to have two ways of looking at this. Let's take our first approach. The first approach is that if you are not holding a halter to that animal and you're holding the bucket and you're trying to bring it to the animal, that's a disaster. There for sure you need to have Rosh HaVerubo because it's so easy for you to just walk out with it as the animal starts backing up or moving its head. There's no question we would make a gzera like that if we make a gzera like that on you where you're trying to drink, right? The only question that I have is like this. You're holding a halter in one hand so that you've got a tight grasp on the head of this para, and now you're bringing the dli to it. So do I actually need the presence or not? So I'm holding both it and the dli. My. She says to him, my. It says in the Mishnah, you need to have the actual para's head and body. It doesn't say it's a shear. It says the para and rosha veruba have to be inside. I'm assuming that that's talking about where you're holding it. I mean, because if you're not holding it, why wouldn't we be cautious that you're going to carry it anyway? No, maybe not. Maybe you're only holding the dli and you're not holding the para. Excuse me? If you're holding the dli and you're not holding the para, you're not allowed to feed it under any and all circumstances. Because it says in the bright that it's going to be coming up, we're going to be learning this tomorrow, that a person cannot, lo yamale adamai vitein b'shabbat lifnei b'emto. You cannot feed your animal water on Shabbos. What? I thought the whole discussion over here is, how are you going to feed your animal water on Shabbos? So all you can do is you can fill up this feeding trough with water, shofech, and then the animal can bend down and drink on its own. But you can't bring it the water. So if you're bringing it the water, you're always going to be cautious that it's backing up. So how can the Mishnah be referring to a case where you're not holding on to it? That seems to be the difference. If the animal is loose, you can't bring it water because you're going to end up following it around. But if the animal is being held, then you can bring it water. I mean, I don't know how else you can understand it. Says, what do you mean, how else you can understand it? I mean, we know how Abaya explained it. You've all got that little picture, right? Somehow or other, there's always some weird picture over here of a cow sticking its neck. And most of the pictures are wrong in the older editions. But anyway, you see the picture. This is the most famous picture of Erevin because everybody's got a different take on the cow, you see. But anyway, the point over here is that Abaya understands the case over here to be a rather straightforward case, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. We are talking about where you've got this feeding trough, which is a reshus hayachid. It's 10 tefachim high. It's the normal 4 tefachim wide or more. The feeding trough itself extends into the area bein hapasim. The animal is in a barn. Now, there's a little window in front of all the animals, and they're all drinking from this feeding trough. So what you want to do is you don't want to pour the water into the feeding trough because it's full of all kinds of animal feed. You don't want to get water over everything. So you have an ingenious idea. Instead of schlepping your animals in there and worrying about Rosh Varuba and so on and so forth, here's what you're going to do. You're going to fill up a bucket. You're going to put the bucket in the mechitzas on top of the feeding trough. So now the bucket's in Rosh Hashayachid, right? Then you're going to walk outside and you're going to slide the bucket along the Rosh Hashayachid, which is the trough, until it gets to the animal. Now that is perfectly okay on the surface, because you are allowed to be in Rishus HaRabim and move things in Rishus HaYochid unless you have a problem of possibly bringing that thing to you because you need it for some purpose. But generally speaking, it's not a problem. And Abaya says that's what the Bright is talking about, that it is a problem in that particular case. And the reason that it is a problem is because, look, you may note after you put the bucket on it that you've got a little bit of a problem because the bucket's not sitting straight on the trough. So what do you want to do? You want to walk outside and you want to fix it a little bit to press things to the side and make sure that now you can put the bucket in it. But if you do that, you may actually take the bucket and put it down on the ground while you're fixing up the inside, right? So then you're going to end up carrying from Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYochid, meaning Bein HaPasim over there, Bein HaDyumdin. And then you're going to carry. Says the Gemara, but that's not called carrying. Don't you remember from Shabbos what the din is? If a guy starts to pick up something to move it from one part of his house to the other part, what's the din if he then changes his mind while he's walking and he puts it down outside? He's not chayiv. because the Akira was not for the purposes of Hotsara. So over here, when you picked up the bucket, the Akira was not for purposes of Hotsara. You picked up the bucket, you put it into Rosh HaSayachid while you were in Rosh HaSayachid. What's wrong with that? So you're saying, okay, but then you may, as you're sliding it, you may put it down. I mean, you never picked it up for that purpose. So you're not going to make a gzera on something that you wouldn't be chayav even if you did, would we? So the Gemara explains, okay, I mean, obviously we could deal with that issue, because what might happen over here is that you'll take the bucket, put it down, fix the trough, and then pick the bucket up from the Rishus HaRabim, where you put it down outside of the Bein HaPasim, and put it back in, and then you'll be carrying from the Rishus HaRabim. Fine, okay, that's just a detail. But the bottom line is it's irrelevant to our case. This was one way of asking the question. The other way of asking the question was in the other direction, and that was Ikri Amrit. Gabe Adam, here we're talking about seven lines up from the big lines. So Gabe Adam, when it comes to you drinking, we say it's enough for Rosh over Ruba. What I want to know is it even enough if a Pora is only Rosh over Ruba? Would that be enough? I mean, look, I mean, obviously, if you're holding it with a halter, right? So then, of course, it's enough. I mean, what's there to be choshed for? I just want to know whether, if it's not being held, whether it's still enough. What's the din? So he says, well, it says in the Mishnah, Rosh of Aruba Mibifnim is good. I'm assuming that's talking about that you're holding you're holding just the bucket, you're not holding it. No, of course it's not talking about that. It's talking about that you were holding it. Of course it has to be talking about holding it, because if it isn't talking about holding it, I thought we said you're not allowed to feed your animal water. Yes, but remember, it didn't mean you're not allowed to feed the animal water. We go through the same thing we went through before. It means, like Abaya said, you draw a little picture with an animal inside of a window and a trough, and it's four, and it's ten, and it's 4x4, and you put it there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we go through exactly the same questions, but what would be wrong with that? And we answer exactly the same way. What would be wrong with that is that maybe you'll set the bucket down on the ground, and then you'll pick it up, and you'll put it back on the trough, and you'll feed it to your animal. That would be a disaster. Okay, fine. Again, that's a side point. So we're back after that. Two, we finished that whole sugya, and Toshma. We get up to the Toshma towards the bottom to finally get an answer to at least the first way that we asked it. And here it talks about a camel. So, a gamel shirosh overu lo bebifnim, you are allowed to be ofsimoto. Remember how you oves the camel? You have to hold it and you have to force the food down. Was the question whether ofsi means you push it down where it can't even back it up, so that it should really say malitin, but okay, whatever. But certainly you cannot do that unless you're holding the camel, right? There's no way to force it, it'll just run away. So it says you're ofsi moto mibifnim. Now, obviously, if you're doing ivus, then for all intents and purposes, you're holding both the feeding bucket, or the water bucket, and you're holding the camel. So it says over there, if Rosh of Arubo is in, and only if Rosh of Arubo is in. So you see, it's a function of Rosh of Arubo, even if you are, Barnea wants to be always be, even if you're holding the camel, you require Rosh of Arubo, and that answers the way that we viewed this in the first place. How does he know that I haven't been drinking? It's not as if he's been looking. So, says the Gemara, excuse me, but, I mean, a camel, you know, a camel has got a very long neck. So a camel can easily twist its neck to the side. I mean, if it's trying to get away, which it probably is going to try to do if you're trying to be ofsim, it is going to be fighting and moving its neck from one side to the other side. It can turn its neck all the way in the other direction. I dare you to get a cow to turn its invisible neck all the way in the other direction, right? So basically, it's no raya from there. It's a camel. Okay, but there's another brighter that says a behemoth. Yeah, okay, but the behemoth means which behemoth? Camel. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, so why do we need two brises, one camel and one behemoth? Come on. You don't do that unless both of these brises were said one with the other. A camel needs Rosh Aruba and a behemoth needs Rosh Aruba. But if the one brighter in one collection of brises says a camel and a brighter in another collection of brises says an animal, then the animal might be a camel. And there's no reason why to think of it any differently. So, Midi Gabe Hadari Tanya doesn't say it together. And indeed, Tanya Namihachi, three lines up from the bottom. Rebbe Eliezer Oser Begamal Hoel Vitzavaro Aruch. If you have a camel because of the fact that it has a long neck, there you've got a problem because it's absolutely essential that you should be even over there for Zrubo Bifnim, because if it's going to fight you, then you're going to be in trouble. So there is a special din of a Kamal Libet Rebbe Eliezer, even where you are holding it, and it's not going to be enough.